today in our recording, I didn't play any music. So we don't have to ask Tom who is that, and Tom could not know who it is. Like, just for the record, like, what do you listen to? Like, what's your genre?
Boy, do I not want to talk about this. When I'm in my car, I put on the XM classic rock stations.
Okay.
I know, like the 80s.
Yeah,
70s or 80s.
That's not bad.
Yeah, I'm not a giant music person. Like, if I have something playing on my headphones,
it's a
podcast. Something, or if I'm doing work and I need something that's, yeah, definitely a solid podcast. Or, of course, the Sunday Puncher exclusive Patreon feed. Can't forget that.
Do you like sports?
If I'm doing work, I like boxing.
Do you like sports, though?
Entertainment. But I don't know if I like any sports outside of those two things.
It's a podcast.
And do you have a recommendation coming? Yeah, okay. I'm listening.
Yeah, it's a podcast. It's a podcast from ESPN. It's called Sports Question Mark. I recommend that. I would consider it sports entertainment because it's sports question mark, because it's like, sports kind of. But anyway, let's talk about, so you were there live, Linares versus Lomachenko last night. Let's just start this off with, like, did you get any information that we would not have seen? And we'll get into, like, a breakdown of the fight, but, like, just any, like, juicy stuff, any bits that you picked up. And I'll throw this out there. I've heard that HBO kind of screwed up, as well as Golden Boy, because Jaime Munguia beats up on Saddam Ali, and we'll get to that later. But he beats up on him, and they don't have an option to promote him. And the rumor is that he's going to ESPN for his next fight. But ESPN deport this. They report that they don't have an option for him in his next fight. So I'm wondering, you hear anything about that? The ESPN deport this is saying that HBO got a one fight option among Munguia. So is there anything like that that you can tell us?
No, I really don't. I mean, I always enjoy trying to bring some of the inside stories, but I just have the only inside stories I have, I definitely can't share. I was on press row with some very salty people. I was
What were they salty about?
I really do not want to get into this on the podcast, but it was, you know, it's interesting when I've been so lucky in the past to get to sit like actually like ringside sometimes in like the very best seats with like Keith Idek and Dan Rafael, like, you know, right up there in the first row. This time I was in the rafters and I was with the people, you know, this is where I always expected I would be, and I'm you know, I'm always surprised every single time they actually put me on press row.
Yeah,
and you know, it was funny being with the other like internet media people, because like some of them are just kind of like, God, I really don't want to get into some of these details, but like,
just don't use any names.
Like ex-fighters who don't really do anything, but they get a credential, so they're up there doing absolutely nothing resembling fighting, and
I've
just
never
like
seen that before.
Airing their grievances about, are you being sarcastic?
No, I swear, I've never seen an ex-fighter like in my area when I've been to a fight. That's pretty crazy.
Well, these are guys who are like ostensibly like doing something related to the sports. They got a credential, but it was like there were two guys near me who happened to be ex-fighters. Yeah, they were like airing their grievances against like past business associates in a lot more detail than I expected.
Bob Arumin, Oscar De La Hoya were in the building. You don't have to say anymore.
So yeah, it was. So one of the inside scoops. These are things I probably can say. So Saddam Ali apparently had been knocked out multiple times by Richard Comey in the lead up to this fight. So before you get too excited about Jaime Munguia, keep in mind that a lightweight, I mean, not figuratively, but literally a 135-pound fighter, had knocked Saddam Ali out multiple times. Before you start thinking that Jaime Munguia's power is going to translate up to knock out Triple G, keep in mind that the same power that he knocked out Saddam Ali with was possessed by a 135-pound fighter who we have seen many times not knock people out on television.
Well, let me just cross out that point then. Keep going. Being sarcastic.
Okay. Yeah, and another one. I don't know if this is even secret news, but apparently the reason why Beefy Smith had to drop out of the Saddam Ali fight was he was having trouble making weight, and he is a fan of beer and kebabs. So based on that quote, you can imagine what country the person who's talking to me comes from. That is all I got.
Oh, that's it? Well,
I have
it's interesting.
More, but stuff I can't tell you. Yeah, I was sitting next to a very loose-lipped man, and I overheard a bunch of other stuff as well. But not really interesting stuff for the podcast or stuff I really feel comfortable talking about.
Well,
we'll have
Tom,
to save that for another future Patreon exclusive episode, really racking these up, some of these fringe topics.
Okay, so let's get into Lenars Lomachenko. And the first thing I want to talk about is your scorecard. Now, I see how you could score it the way you did, but just kind of give an overview of your scoring for the fight.
Sure. So first, I think, so just for those who haven't checked my scorecard online, first five
and I
rounds,
completely like, disagreed with it, by the way. So this is why I'm asking.
Sure, I'm interested to hear where you're coming from. I'll lay out my case and then I'll hear where you're coming from.
Yeah,
so
but
first five rounds.
I completely understand your scorecard totally. But if someone, and I'm sure there are people out there that are salty about the way you had it, I do want them to kind of get your perspective that you had last night. So let's go with that.
Sure. So first five, so just recapping, first five rounds I had for Lomachenko. Sixth round was the knockdown round that, of course, swings it back to Lenares. Next two rounds went to Lenares as well. So that was the seventh and eighth. The ninth round I thought was close, but I scored for Lomachenko. And then the 10th round was the knockout round in favor of Lomachenko. So just to give some background on where I was coming from, I generally will score the cleaner punching. It's very hard to judge who's punching harder. That's very subjective. And like I said, I was not ringside this time. That's one of the things you really do get from ringside, because you can hear the noise and you can see the sweat fly and you can really see specifically whether, you know, a punch has landed or, you know, landed on a damaging area or whether it's landed on a glove, because sometimes there could still be a noise in that case. You know, I say as someone who edits video, like if you're watching like 30 FPS, 720p video, not getting as much detail by the time you're getting the 1080, that's great. 1080, 60 FPS, you get more detail. But, you know, even then it's like there are little details, even if you're going frame by frame, you can't necessarily tell. That's the sort of stuff you can pick up when you're at ringside. So, you know, I did lose some of that from where I was. But yeah, generally speaking, I score the cleaner punching, which sometimes is a problem when you have a smaller guy against a bigger guy, because a smaller guy might land a cleaner punch, but it's not really doing as much damage. So to relate to this, I scored Rung Vasai versus Estrada for Estrada because I felt he was landing the cleaner shots. A lot of people disagreed with my scoring there, as did the official judges, but that was how I saw it. Yeah, so case in point as
that.
It relates to this fight as well. So in this fight, from my perspective, you know, speaking of those first five rounds, Lomachenko was frustrating Lenares. Lenares was getting marked up, but granted, his face gets marked up from a stiff wind, from a stiff breeze. Felt Lomachenko had his feet under him when he was landing his punches. They seemed to have more leverage on them. He seemed to be landing cleaner. Lenares more often seemed to be off balance, and he was touching Lomachenko, but just did not seem to be landing cleanly, landing powerfully. It was funny then when the knockdown happened. I was extraordinarily surprised when the knockdown happened because I thought, you know, Lenares is not getting he's just not landing clean here. Lomachenko is frustrating him. I mean, I still didn't think necessarily a knockout was going to come, but I thought, okay, this is clearly in Lomachenko's favor. Knockdown comes, and then Lomachenko didn't necessarily look hurt, but he seemed tentative and less active. So I felt that Lenares was able to swing the next two rounds by doing, you know, similar stuff he was doing early on, but being more effective, Lomachenko being less active and less effective. And then I definitely thought at that point, with the big size difference between them, Lomachenko was not going to be able to hurt him. And then, you know, when that knockdown came, I was, again, my jaw was on the floor. I never would have seen that knockout coming when it did.
Well,
so yeah. Oh, go on.
Well, what I was going to say is, first of all, sitting ringside is far different from sitting where you were, which is up high. And I've been there before. Your ringside view is a lot closer to TV. You had a view of the fight that was not quite TV, unless you just watched the screen the whole time.
Well, quick thing about that, yeah, the screen is on a delay, so that was
so
horrible.
Yeah, exactly. So it's
arena,
really tough to
so
watch
it's,
that. Yeah.
It's like mind bending. Yeah, you're kind of half trying to watch from the ring, and you're in this weird overhead position, which is good in some ways because you can really see the people, you know, see how they're moving around the ring, get a sense of the ring generalship from that angle. But yeah, you lose a lot. Anyway, yeah, continue.
Yeah, so, you know, I just want to say it's totally different. So I understand why, like, your score was that way. Because I disagree with you. I don't think Lomachenko swept the fight. I think if you did not give Linares, I'll say four. I want to say four, but I would go down to three. If you didn't give Linares 3 rounds, you're crazy. Because
Well, I gave him 3 rounds.
it's clear that you don't score body work, because Linares was doing great body work early in that fight. Linares was landing the harder shots. There's no doubt about that. Lomachenko completely changed after the knockdown. And it's the first sign where we've seen from him that he might be human. Now, just generally overall in the fight, I do want to say, because any criticism of Lomachenko, like, is going to be perceived as hating. Am I wrong?
Yeah, but I mean, I got it from both sides. So, yeah, but
Well,
Lord
I
knows
mean, in
Lomachenko
general, like
has his
casual
fanboys out
fan,
there.
you
Yeah, yeah,
don't
yeah.
praise Lomachenko for his angles or whatever, and it's like, oh, you're hating on him, you just don't like Lomachenko or something like that, and that's not the case whatsoever. I think, and I've always said he's extraordinarily talented, but I'm not over the moon on him. Like I'm not bought off by flashy footwork and his little training methods. Like whatever, win fights. That's at the end of the day, that's what it's about. Is hitting and not getting hit. And from just a points pers or not points, but like an actual punch count perspective, he was getting outlanded. He was throwing a
That's
ton of
really
punches, but
interesting.
he was getting outlanded, especially in power punches. And if you're somebody who prefers clean, effective shots, that was Linares. Lomachenko was incredibly active with his jab, and I'll give him that. But it's very similar to in Golovkin Canelo, where you had a guy who was landing very clear heavy blows, but could not avoid getting hit with jabs. And he took some heavy blows himself. There's no doubt about it. It wasn't just Lenar's jab versus Lomachenko, or sorry, Lomachenko's jab versus Lenar's body and power shots. That's not what the story, but it was more Lomachenko was heavily throwing the jab with other stuff, whereas Lenar's was using his jab like basically to set up power shots. And so, one, this was a really close fight, and the judges had it basically even at the time of the stoppage. To the stoppage, I thought, I predicted that Lomachenko would be able to get a stoppage here, but I didn't see it coming this way. And the way it came, neither did Linares. Like, if you'd asked Linares, like, how are you gonna, like, even if you say Linares, let's say you lose, and he was willing to concede that, like, okay, let's say I do lose. He would never have said he'll hit me to the body and I won't like. They just he would have been like he'll catch me with my hands down or something and I'll go out cold. That's the only way I'm losing this fight. And it was just such a well placed shot that I think hurts a welterweight probably. And that's not because Lomachenko's like insanely powerful. This isn't Adonis Stevenson up there. I think it's just that's just technique, and it was brilliant. And I'm not gonna like it's just a great shot that. Linares had no choice there. He that was just the shot. It's like Maidana didn't want to go down to round one against a guy who punches like Amir Khan, because Amir Khan's not a puncher. But you get hit in the right spot and you go down, and everybody talks about the liver shot. And so that's kind of like my general sort of thoughts about the fight. But I was really impressed that Linares went to the body really early on. There's more things I want to get to about this fight, but I want to check in with you and see if there's anything you want to respond to there.
Yeah, quick response. I mean, the reason why the body shot knockout was so, I mean, to me, the narrative had really taken over that Linares has a big size advantage. Lomachenko can't hurt him. You know, it's like he's getting the shots in, but I felt like by that point in the fight, Linares had seen everything he could coming. I mean, did you think at that point that Lomachenko had that type of punch in him? I know you said Linares must have been surprised it was a body shot knockout, but I mean, just
Well,
period. I mean, did you think at that point Lomachenko was going to be able to hurt Linares?
I did. I
I didn't
did.
think at
So,
all. I thought that it was going to be a knockout at that point. I thought this has distance fight written all over it, you know. Anyway.
I thought it was going to go to the distance, but in that round, if you go back and watch it, I have a couple recommendations for you that I'll get to in a little bit. But if you go back and watch that round, Lomachenko had landed a combination that seemed to have buzzed Linares. And it wasn't like he was hurt, like his legs weren't wobbly, but it certainly looks like he wasn't thinking straight. because very soon afterwards, he's completely exposed to the body and gets hit with that shot. And that's purely a result of Lomachenko landing shots.
And
I don't think that shot's open for him if he wouldn't have landed that combination that he had landed before, because Linares was very responsible defensively. Lomachenko's incredibly fast. And that's like my main takeaway from the fight. If you're like, what did you learn from this fight? Like, what are your thoughts about Lomachenko now? The only thoughts that I have are he is so fast and like just naturally athletic. He's so fast and his conditioning is insane. And that is the difference, because skill-wise, this was close. You cannot sit here and say Lomachenko is way more skilled than Linares. It was high-speed chess, and it was competitive. But the difference was that Lomachenko has an 7th, 8th, 9th gear to go to that most fighters don't have. And you add on to that his speed, like the explosion in his legs, is just next level. You know, it, like his whole matrix stuff, his angles, that's so, like, it's nonsense to me. Because he tried that and he got dropped. Like, that stuff disappeared in this fight. Because, and he, this is like my, like, what I was thinking about last night is Lomachenko reminds me, and you don't watch basketball, so this is probably going to go over your head. But, like, there's the NBA, and I'm sure you've seen an NBA game before, and I'm sure you've seen, like, guys who are really good at basketball play in the NBA. And I'm sure you may have also seen, and I'm talking like you to you, Tom, and if you haven't, I recommend you go to Rucker Park or something and see street ballers, because they do things that you don't see in the NBA and are amazing. They make guys think the ball is places that it's not. And that's like incredible technique with dribbling and like athleticism to like just break dudes' ankles like when they're dribbling and driving and stuff. But how come you don't see anybody in the NBA doing that? Like, if that is so effective, like, I can make you think the ball is behind you when it's actually still in my hand, like magician stuff, how come people don't do that in the NBA? And the answer to that is that it doesn't work at that level. It really doesn't. People refine their skills because it takes a lot of energy and effort to do that, but people refine their skills to adjust to everyone being skilled. And they adjust to, like, let's do less, but be effective at it. And that's Lomachenko. He does a lot of crazy amateur tricks, and they're amazing to watch. And they're obvious to see. When you watch him, it's like, oh, yeah, he's doing stuff that I don't see other fighters do. But there's a reason why you don't see guys fight like that. Like, do you really think that Floyd Mayweather couldn't have done the stuff that Lomachenko did? Do you really think that Andre Ward can't make guys look that silly? If you think the answer is yes to that, you're crazy, because they certainly can. But at the end of the day, there's a reason why the elite fighters have specific styles where they don't get hit very much, because you don't need to do that much. Why do all that stuff when you can conserve and not expose yourself? And Lomachenko does that. And like, look, it's entertaining to watch. There's no doubt about it. But there's a reason why he got hit so much in this fight and got dropped. And it's because he does a lot of stuff that's totally unnecessary. Even Roy Jones didn't do this stuff. And when you talk about Matrix, it's Roy Jones. But even he didn't do all this stuff. It's work at the elite level, it's about working smarter and not harder. And he's just got incredible... like, I mean, I'm in awe of how incredible he is athletically. The conditioning is absurd. His reaction time, unbelievable. But I think that it's something like, it will not last. He's 30 years old. And it's going to be very sad if he doesn't learn or start to adjust to a more pro-friendly style. Because this is the hurt game after all. And look at Roy Jones once the athleticism went. I know I said a lot there, so I'll let you get in.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, there are a bunch of things to respond to there. I mean, first, as far as, you know, going way back, as far as the knockout, I'll come back around to that. So, I agree completely. I mean, I think, you know, we've talked about this before, both on podcast and offline, and we have the same frustrations with Lomachenko. You know, the Lomachenko fanboys love to go nuts for some of the angles and some of the combinations he throws. But, I mean, yeah, there's a reason that pros don't do that. I mean, I always think about that. Like, look, a few weeks ago, Tank Davis, Gervonta Davis, knocking out Jesus Cuellar. You know, short, effective shots. You know, he used angles. He used, you know, he adjusted levels. Great punch variety. You know, he got the knockout. It wasn't from throwing 12 punches to then land two. You know, right. It's like he doesn't need to throw 12 punches, eight of which are meant to miss, two of which, like, you know, lands, you know, on the guard, and then two that actually connect. You know, he's not circling completely around his opponent to then try to land one punch. I mean, those things, as was indicated very directly by the knockdown, those create defensive gaps. Mm-hmm. And those also expend a tremendous amount of energy. Boxing is all about efficiency. It's all about economy of movement. I mean, that was mm-hmm. the lesson the world that didn't know about boxing learned in the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight. You know, McGregor was expending a tremendous amount of energy and was gassed, you know, very early on in that fight to an alarming extent, something you'd never see in pro boxing. Because everything in pro boxing is about you know, managing offense and defense. And a large amount of that is managing your gas tank. You know, it's one of the reasons Canelo's output is so low fundamentally. It's not a matter of conditioning. It's because on offense or defense, you know, when he's on defense, he moves his whole body. He moves his whole upper body. You know, he's moving his legs.
Yeah. He tries not to waste anything.
I would say it's tremendously wasteful in that way. I mean, as opposed to, you know, there are other ways where you can just slip a punch and just move, you know, a little bit, or smother a shot, just come in and maybe the punch touches you a little bit, but, you know, all the power is taken off of it. I mean, this is what pro boxing is about. Well, he's not without flaws. Yeah, so, I mean, regarding Lomachenko, that's the thing I've always been frustrated by, and it's also why so many people love him, because he does break so many rules, and that was the reason why, you know, in a different way, people love Roy Jones back in the day. And so it was fascinating, this fight. I mean, both his worst moment when he got knocked down was because he was, again, it was a lot of wasted movement there, created the opportunity for that knockdown punch to come in straight down the pipe. But at the same time, and this is where just to clarify what I was, you know, I didn't really get into these details, but about, you know, how I saw how the knockout came. Mm-hmm. I was surprised that the knockout came, but yeah, mm-hmm. I recognize it wasn't a single punch. I mean, he put the foot on the gas pedal, landed those beautiful uppercut combinations, had some success. This is about, you know, minute 30 into the round, landed another string of those, had Linares circling to his left, and then dipped that absolutely beautiful left hook to the body. I mean, you know, I was surprised that a knockout came, period. Not that, you know, it was magic that a punch landed, but, you know, just that I didn't think Linares was hurt at that point. And that's the thing, you know, credit to Lomachenko that he can go from 0 to 60, back to 0, and then up to 120. And that's what he did there. I mean, he, you know, really just slammed the foot on the gas pedal, saw it was effective, slammed the foot on again, and then slipped in that beautiful body shot. So you really saw, you know, why he's effective, and also where some flaws come into that. And I think really the important way to frame this that you haven't really gotten into, Lomachenko fought at 132 as an amateur, fought at mm-hmm. 126 when he turned pro, fought at 130. Now up at 135, he's going to be fighting guys who are bigger than him. And that was extremely apparent with Jorge Linares. That was another, you know, another bit of grumbling around press row is how much he actually weighed, because there was some dispute whether he rehydrated to 154, which would be, you know, absolutely monstrous in terms of, you know, body percentage for a weight gain. He and his camp said it was more like mid-140s, which is more reasonable for what you would expect a lightweight to rehydrate to. I mean, at the very least, he has a much bigger frame than Lomachenko. And even then,
I mean, he looked Linares about 150.
I mean, yeah, he looked big. I mean, you know, we've seen other lightweights who get up around that level. Shane Mosley got up around that level when he was a lightweight.
Crawford
got up. Yeah, exactly. The two names that come to mind. And I think it's possible Linares was around that level. But again, both of those guys have much bigger frames. That was the smallest they ever were, was lightweight, both for Crawford and Mosley. And I know they fought lighter as amateurs, but that was when they were much, much younger. Lomachenko was fighting 132 as an amateur when he was like 26. anyway, to get back to Linares, though, I mean, Linares started much smaller, younger. You know, this is now where he's topped out in his career at 135, and he's still that much bigger than Lomachenko. When you look at guys like Robert Easter, that have a massive, massive height advantage. I mean, granted, I would never pick Easter to beat Lomachenko for a lot of other reasons, but just saying purely in terms of size. And Mikey Garcia now has been fighting at 140. I think he would come into the ring with a tremendous functional size advantage over Lomachenko. Again, he's another guy who's come up through the weight classes, but he did it when he was younger. I think he's just, at this point, a physically bigger person than Lomachenko was. Lomachenko is an extremely small person. So anyway, to bring back to this topic about, you know, the unorthodox things that he does, I mean, when you actually have to fight guys who are, you know, where you don't have a size advantage, you know, he had a size advantage over the guys he was fighting at 126, suddenly you can't do that necessarily. And I thought, you know, just to skip ahead a bit, something that was really fascinating was seeing the post-fight press conference. I believe the footage is out there. I mean, I saw it in person, obviously. I was, you know, like 10 feet away from them. But for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, Lomachenko and Igas Klimas look completely deflated and crestfallen. You know, the overall mood of the boxing press and the crowd was very much, say, similar to the Deontay Wilder fight a few months ago. You know, Wilder got hurt badly by Ortiz, but he came back and stopped him. It was kind of an all is forgiven type of thing. That was not the mood from the Lomachenko camp. This was definitely a, you know, our weakness has been revealed. The aura of invincibility has been peeled back a bit. And I think they also know, as it relates to that fan base, I mean, when you were saying at the start of this, how Lomachenko fans are so crazy, you know, where it's not even just a matter of not criticizing him, that if you aren't praising him sufficiently, you will get flack. It'll be really interesting to see what happens to his fan base. I mean, we've talked about this a lot with Lomachenko, with Golovkin, that after the Jacobs fight went the distance, the Canelo fight went the distance, that a huge amount of his online support just sloughed off.
Well, they jumped on Lomachenko.
Right, exactly, because they want the new invincible guy. They want the new golden boy.
Yeah. Many front runners.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, that's the thing. As a boxing fan, I think I've never been more impressed with Lomachenko, given all the circumstances, you know, keeping in mind he was fighting a bigger guy, keeping in mind that he really did have to dig down, that, you know, once he got knocked down and he seemed taken aback by that, yeah, okay, he probably lost the next two rounds, but he figured out a way to come back and win, and, you know, won by tremendous knockout. I've been going for a bit.
Let me jump in here because you kind of are going to lead me into something. So and what I wanted to talk about next was that and you know, Igas Klimas and Lomachenko having that, like, kind of like just somber tone after the fight. Well,
right,
you know,
somber is the perfect word.
It was a great win, no doubt about it. But I think the tone and everything, that what that's all about is that Lomachenko sees a ceiling now. He knows where it, like, he just knows now, oh, I'm at best, I'm just a little bit better than the number two guy at lightweight right now. And you're seeing it all over the place. Even Gleb, who is just insufferably a Lomachenko fan. And just like just beats angles in the matrix into your head. Even he's now like, Mikey Garcia is going to knock out Lomachenko.
Yeah, I like, saw full that come stop. Up a lot. So many people posting that online, and yeah, strong, strong sentiment.
Yeah, so and it's because of the pro style, like that Mikey Garcia is the antithesis of what Lomachenko does. Lomachenko's flash and sizzle. And Mikey Garcia is just like, it's all steak. It's all power shots. It's all hurt and don't get hurt. And my question is, for those people that had Lomachenko at pound for pound number one, does he still have an argument to be there?
Putting that back to me. I'm not going to answer the question. I'm just going to say it's going to be extremely interesting to see what happens with this fan base. And also, you know, if you want to lay out, you know, some, just like, let's lay out a picture of Lomachenko. Let's lay out a picture of Golovkin. Let's lay out a picture of Crawford, just on a table, just those three faces. You know, I don't think it's a surprise that a lot of the Golovkin fans, or let's back up even further. Sergey Kovalev fans went to Golovkin.
Those were originally Pacquiao fans.
Went to, well, that kind of ruins my premise. That
but keep going, keep going, keep going. No, it goes back.
Yeah, I mean, just, you see it kind of rolling through that, you know, you have sort of, Kovalev fans kind of getting behind Golovkin, Golovkin fans starting to slip over to Linares. And I know it sounds probably like we're doing a lot of projecting, but, you know, we moderate Forum Online. We see all the stuff that's picked up in reported comments because people are using the N-word. You know, like, we're aware of the racial stuff that happens because we have to deal with it. I mean, I don't want to, you know, I'm probably the least active mod, so I don't want to claim that I'm putting in this hard work, but I still see all the stuff that comes up in the mod queue. But, you know, it's like these fans are going from, you know, Kovalev to Golovkin to Lomachenko. Somehow I doubt they're now going to go to Crawford. We'll see what happens, but that's
no, the thing. Crawford.
Who's the next guy they're going to go to? I mean, that's the point. I feel not the natural home. I mean, whether it's, you know, whether it's racially motivated or you just want, you know, like there is the appeal, like you were mentioning the Pacquiao fans, to give them a little more credit than that. I mean, I'll speak of like Cheap Boxer is a guy who really liked Pacquiao. I think Pacquiao got him
really
in
the sport of glove,
who was kind of his next guy.
Mm-hmm.
He really likes Lomachenko also. He had some very, very glowing things to say after the Brigandeau fight last fall. So I don't think Crawford as, you know, I'm trying to think of a right way to describe Crawford's personal life, but, you know, American boxer with a very colorful personal life. I don't think those fans are then going to translate to that. I don't think they're going to be happy to accept Crawford as pound for pound number one. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm very interested to see. I know I keep repeating myself, but very interesting to see how this plays out with Lomachenko's fans over the next few months. If they migrate somewhere else, if we see them being more defensive, Lomachenko, see how they start to view Mikey Garcia. If they're, you know, take it as a given, it'll beat Mikey Garcia. If they get defensive when Mikey Garcia's name comes up, or if, you know, they just don't want to engage in that argument because they don't think he would win it.
Yeah, I do wonder. I think the fans will stay. Lomachenko still won the fight. And he got a stoppage. If Golovkin would have stopped Jacobs, it would have been a totally different thing with the fans. But going forward, I think that, look, Lomachenko, the thing to take away is that it was a little humbling. Lomachenko walked around boxing like he was untouchable. And in some regards, you have to have that mindset to excel, but also you cannot take for granted that anything can happen in a fight. You know, Floyd Mayweather, throughout his entire career, every guy he stepped in the ring with, you knew he was more talented. And you knew that Andre Berto, if Mayweather really wanted, wasn't going to win a single round. And even when Floyd would take rounds off, there was absolutely zero, like, risk being taken. Because it was like, this is boxing. It's life or death in the ring. And if you leave me an open shot, I will take it. And Lomachenko hasn't exactly fought that way. For him, boxing has been an exhibition of skill. Kind of like, I'm going to show off what I'm capable of. But he's finally gets somebody in the ring. And look, Linares is not that great. He's not. Prior to the fight, would we have put Linares in the top 20 pound for pound in boxing? I don't know. I don't know.
That's a whole other interesting topic. Lots of Anthony Crolla fans would. I'm amazed at how overrated Linares became after his European tour. But anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, we don't need to get into that. But the point is, like, Lomachenko, what he saw is, like, I'm just marginally better than the number two guy at lightweight. And that's amazing for a guy that started his career at 126, although other guys have done similar things and even gone up higher in weight. So it's not the most amazing thing. You know, Mikey Garcia is in the same position and jumped all the way to 140. And we can talk about Manny Pacquiao, whatever. So the point is, though, I think the ceiling is now in view. And the question is, like, if you're Lomachenko's camp, what do you want to do? Obviously, you stay at 135 because Ray Beltran's got a belt. You go and unify belts with him, and maybe you just go back down to 130. Especially if the Beltran fight isn't quite easy. Because you have a special talent on your hands and you don't want to waste it because he can draw, he can sell tickets. You don't want to wait. I mean, he's going to do a bigger number than Golovkin did. Now, it won't be the biggest ESPN number that they've done. It won't even be the second biggest ESPN number. It might be third or fourth, but it's still a really good sign for Lomachenko's ability to draw and be a star in the sport. But There's no point wasting that trying to chase this weird legacy that nobody's going to care about. You won a title at 135. There's no reason to dominate it. And 140 is pretty much out of the question at this point.
Yeah, so a few things. So, yeah, we had talked about this. I mean, that was one specific fanboy narrative that was just completely idiotic, that Lomachenko is going to go all the way up to 147 and dominate welterweights, that he's so good.
Let me jump in right here.
Anything. Yeah, go ahead.
Just real quick, I'm pretty sure that when we see Terrence Crawford fighting at 147, you're going to think to yourself, oh, this doesn't look the same. Like, you're used to Crawford being, if not the same size, like bigger than his opponents. And it's going to look odd to see Crawford in there with big guys. Go on.
Yeah, maybe not against Jeff Horn. And I'll get to that as it relates to Lomachenko. But you definitely, you start to see that narrative stuff up. Also, I just want to, you know, give him some credit here, because I feel like this probably comes off like I'm being very rough on him. It's more just the tone here coming from both of us, I think, is more annoying with his fanboys than him, you know, himself. I mean,
tried really hard not to be that way, and just like, because I also want to talk about the commentary, which is like, it's going
to. Oh, yeah, I look forward to you getting to that. I'll just finish my little bit here. Yeah, I mean.
But I was very impressed with Lomachenko, okay? I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah. I mean, it was great. I mean, we were, yeah, I was like super pumped when he got the stoppage. I'm going to credit him for biting down and getting it. I mean, that's the thing I said was funny in between the different perspectives between the Wilder wins, the Wilder win versus the Lomachenko win. That, you know, it's sort of, this is sort of Wilder's brand now, that you're not expecting people to knock, not expecting him to outbox people. But then, you know, it's exciting when he comes back and gets the knockout. And I feel like this was against brand for Lomachenko. I think that's the reason why we're seeing a different reaction from the fans and from his camp, that, you know, even without the knockdown, he still looked extremely human for most of the fight. And again, it's a huge knockout finish, which I would think would be the headline. But it was interesting that that wasn't really, I mean, you know, I'm sure Top Rank is going to do a great job of promoting this in terms of bringing out the footage. I mean, and I think that really should be the story, that, you know, he had to gut down against a bigger guy and he did it, and that's awesome. And separately, quick thing about the draw. So his last fight, he did 5,500 seats at the theater at Madison Square Garden, sold it out. That was like a super sellout. They could have sold more tickets, but that was the venue they chose. They didn't go for the big room. This was another press row thing. It was probably reported also, but it was apparently they sold about 11,000 tickets. They had configured the room for 10,000. But then sold that out. So then they opened up a few more sections. And it was very stark to see where those were, because in the upper bowl, it was like, it wasn't spread out at all. It was just in like two sections that a little spillover, because like the security wasn't like policing the people, that just moved over a little bit. So that's, you know, he sold almost double, you know, just about precisely double the number of tickets he did for his last fight. So, you know, that's a pretty good step up. And 11,000 tickets, you know, not bad. I mean, he's, I think the last Broner fight did about, 14,000,
you know, 11,000 is only like 20% more of what the StubHub holds.
Yeah. But I mean, that's still, it's still so more than, you know, some of,
it's more than Danny Jacobs, that's for
fight.
Sure.
Yeah, right.
Selling 7,000 in his hometown?
His own deal. It's more than any of the Matchroom USA cards so far. So, yeah, I mean, that's a good number for him. I mean, it's always, we talk about Lomachenko, though. I mean, he's on a different schedule, though, because he's already 30, even though he only has 11 pro fights, if you don't count his World Series of Boxing fights. So, you know, that's another thing. I mean, we'll see. I mean, he had a huge amount of momentum coming out of the last fight. Again, you would think by normal boxing rules he would have even more momentum because he got this come-from-behind knockout. But, you know, is that what his fans want, or do they want? I'm just going to tell a quick story. I know I've been going on for a long time. At Jacobs Golovkin, there were the most obnoxious Golovkin fans. They were just unbearable. I mean, this is what you see happen. Like, I'm so used to, in New York, there's a core audience of people, and then when you see some of these bigger fights, you see people who really aren't boxing fans but are coming to the event for one reason or another, because
like
it's,
the,
you know,
people who work for ESPN.
But yeah, I mean, like Cotto fights always get a huge Puerto Rican crowd who clearly are not boxing fans. Like, you know, they're cheering for the wrong things or booing at the wrong moments. I mean, you see this.
They're
in
booing
any
Roman
sport,
Reigns.
But... I'm trying to think what the boxing equivalent to that would be, but
there isn't yeah. one.
There was a guy sitting a few seats over from us. So that one I didn't cover. We had like everyone from Reddit there, so there was no credential for me for that. I mean, which is completely fine. I had some friends coming down who wanted to see that fight also. And he was telling his friends, and he was giving them completely the Mike Tyson sales pitch. Look, this guy Golovkin, he's going to blow this guy out. Oh my God, this is going to be amazing. He's going to blow this guy out. Like, his opponent doesn't have a chance. There was, I mean, the sales pitch he was giving on the event was not even a boxing match. It was a watching YouTube clips of young Mike Tyson sales pitch. And, you know, it was, I knew and my friends knew, we had all discussed that Jacobs was by far his toughest fight up to that point. And, you know, thought still might get the knockout, but we thought, you know, Jacobs is in a position to give him by far his hardest fight. And that's definitely what played out. He got so flustered and his friends were so bored, they left before the end of the fight.
Oh, Jesus.
Because all they wanted was a Golovkin blowout. And, you know, meanwhile, they're watching this tremendous fight, mm-hmm. a hugely significant fight in Golovkin's career, a fight that, you know,
that was competitive.
Yeah, I mean, you could still, it's not like Golovkin lost. I mean, most people thought he won. If people, even people who scored it for, yeah, it was like, this was great. It's one of the most fun boxing events that I've, you know, been to as a fan for sure. And they left, they literally left because it wasn't a blowout. That's what they wanted. So, I mean, that's when you talk about the Lomachenko thing. It seems like his, you know, based on some of the reactions I've seen, it will be kind of interesting to see what happens. Because if you want just pure domination, if that's the brand, that is not what you got, even though he ultimately got the knockout. You know, he's not Rocky Balboa. That's not what he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be, you know, superhuman. So, anyway, it'll be interesting to see how that narrative plays out. I know I've been going on for a long time.
Well, the thing I wanted to say is, I can't remember what I was going to say in response to what you said, but I'm just going to ask it as a rhetorical because there's no point really to discuss it. But by the time of the fight, Lomachenko was a -1600 favorite. Like, how did he do for a guy that fought a guy who was +950? Conor McGregor didn't even open up at that line.
Well, Conor McGregor odds were completely insane, but
I mean, what other odds can I bring up here? I don't think Sergey Lipinets, the line was that wide. Anyway, I want to get into ESPN. So
sure.
ESPN did a great job with this fight. Like, I got to tell you, before the fight, they did really well transitioning from the SportsCenter 6 o'clock edition into the fight, and they did a lot of they did really well promoting the fight. But here's the thing. They dropped the ball. You cannot listen to this. If you are not the most diehard Lomachenko fan who doesn't want to hear anything like that's critical, you probably haven't gotten to this point of the podcast. But secondly, you probably love the commentary because first of all, what's like the number one rule in like doing a wrestling promo? It's that you don't just bury the other guy. You don't bury your opponent. Because when you beat him, you look like a moron.
Because
you know, like, obviously it's going to be entertaining and competitive. But if you just go out there and it's competitive and then you barely beat him, or it takes a lot of effort, you look like a moron because you made him look like a fool. What you do is you make it look like, you know, he's a tough guy. That this is like beating him is going to mean something. ESPN did none of that. Joe Tessitore's knowledge, and I love Joe Tessitore. I think he's great on college football, and he's going to be calling Monday Night Football, and he's great, like, just as a play-by-play guy. He's got a great voice. He adds excitement, and his inflection, and everything is good. But his boxing knowledge, and this is the guy who used to call Friday Night Fights, Joe
Tessitore. Yeah, I was going to say, like, he's been doing this for a long time.
His boxing knowledge legitimately sounds like he reads press releases and does interview with promoters and repeats what they tell him, because what his performance last night was absolutely terrible. Linares was undermined all night. Lomachenko would land like grazing blows in combination. Linares would counter with a body shot. or a hook or something, and we would hear about Lomachenko's blazing speed and his combinations and his angles over and over again. And like, I usually mute the commentary or listen to it with it low, but I just kind of didn't do it this time. And I don't know why, but I just didn't do it. And I'm just listening. Oh, you know why? Because I wasn't in the chat. So like, I was just like, whatever. I'm just going to, you know, watch this. And it was horrible. Like, just truly horrible. Like, a complete, like, Linares just sounded like a complete jabroni. Like, just some random guy they brought in who has a belt. And Lomachenko, the god, was going to destroy him. And now Lomachenko looks like a fool if you're just turned in, because it's like, the dude got dropped. You guys, like, blew him all night long. And he got dropped, and the judges had it close. Like, the reality did not line up with the narrative that they tried to give us. And Mark Kriegel and Tim Bradley, I'll give them credit, because they kept trying to, like, insert that, like, yeah, but Linares did land a good left there. And it was real quick and subtle, you know, because they obviously didn't want to, like, Joe Testor was going somewhere with this commentary. They didn't want it to make it seem like, oh, yeah, we're just kind of disagreeing with you. And, you know, obviously that's not going to bode well when you're trying to call a fight live as it's going on. But it was just totally, in my opinion, unacceptable. Like, I cannot, I don't think I'll ever let the commentary, like, be loud in for another top rank event, because the commentary was that bad. And I hate to, like, complain like that, but it just really was inexcusable to me that you have a guy of Jorge Linares who, granted, we, you know, we've said some stuff about Jorge Linares and how he's overrated and blah, blah, blah. But it's really, really horrible and awful to me that he basically got treated like a moron. And so if you're going to go back and watch it, like, you know, you're either watching because you're going to mute it, or what you're gonna do is you're gonna be taking notes just so you can see how bad it is, because it was really that bad.
Yeah, you've got me. Well, I mean, you got me really excited to watch it on TV based on your call on how well Linares did relatively. I'm really interested to see what I missed from my, like, weird, you know, circumstance of watching the fight, like, half above and half on a monitor that was, like, not audio synced. But yeah, not looking forward to the audio. I mean, in a little bit of Testor's defense, I mean, there's also this thing where Lampley, you know, gets a bit of shit, and, like, I give him a bit of shit for this. I think there is a bit of a plan. Like, I can't claim to know that much about professional broadcasting, but it does seem like in a lot of these fights there is sort of a plan of, like, you know, one guy is going to take this narrative, and then the other guy is sort of play the devil's advocate. Like, usually Jim Lampley's in that role where he's taking the line of, like, the favorite HBO guy. It's not always the case, but yeah, I've heard that. You know, I have heard that a lot of these top rank ESPN cards are really almost like an infomercial, which, you know,
yes,
to some extent everything is, you know, usually there is a, like, a favored guy for the network, but yeah, I didn't watch it, so I can't speak to that. But I am separately looking forward to watching it for sure based on your description of the fight.
Your old friend Hebrew Hammer, okay? This dude fights on HBO.
Don't get me going.
He fights on HBO, and they put him over big. You and I both know that. But they did nothing on his opponents. So when he gets beat, what are they left with? They didn't exactly put over Eve Ulysses Jr. So it's not like anybody wants to see Ulysses Jr. fight again, because they didn't do their freaking job. When you have neutral commentators, the winner looks great at the end. But that's not what they did in the Cletus Seldon versus Eve Ulysses Jr. fight. And they didn't do that then. If Linares would have beat Lomachenko, it would not have had much of an impact. It would have been excuses galore after the fight about why Lomachenko wasn't Lomachenko that night, and not, hey, Linares was just better. So anyway, that's it for that. I want to move on to the Munguia fight.
Oh, yeah, just very quick response about that. Yeah, no, totally. I mean, you know, great point. I don't know if I wrote in would have been going through wrestling promos, but I mean, it's a great point overall. I mean, when I'm doing the highlight clips leading up to a fight, I always try to feature both guys, because yeah, exactly, even if one guy is really favored, then you want to make it, you know, then it adds substance to the win. I mean, even like, you know, the Jermall Charlo versus Hugo Centeno fight. Centeno was a, you know, a heavy underdog, but he had some one punch knockout performances on his highlight reel. So, you know, it's like, why don't you want to show those clips? That's going to get you pumped up for the fight. And it also shows, by the way, I mean, always, it is worth respecting professional boxers. Like, they could absolutely annihilate any random person in a boxing gym. I mean,
yeah.
I say this from my own experience. If you're in a boxing gym, there will be guys who are, like, you know, badasses. They're absolutely ripped. And then, like, you find out that they're the opponent for a local fighter who isn't even considered
they're
to
like
be on
four
like, the U.S.
Four.
Domestic scene. Yeah, and, like, they're the opponent for that guy. Yeah, exactly. Like, they're 4-4, but you see him in the gym, you're like, oh, my God, this guy's amazing. I mean, just based on that and being around real boxing gyms, I have respect for all fighters. You know, I know sometimes I can be glib on the podcast, but, I mean, that really deep down I do. And, yeah, I mean, that is so frustrating to me. HBO is so guilty of that all the time, where they'll have, you know, if one guy wins, he's going to fight on HBO again. But if the other guy wins, then they don't care. They're just going to move on. Exactly. The Hebrew Hammer, that's a great example. You know, to segue into your next point, though, I thought that was extremely interesting with Saddam Ali fight, because, boy, were they ready to get on the bandwagon of Jaime Munguia immediately. So why don't you kick that off?
Okay, so we had here's one last thing about that. When I started writing and, you know, I just really started writing because I wanted to talk about boxing and share that, like, I love it. And I get excited for all fights. And to this day, I'm excited about all fights. Like, I got asked in the Discord yesterday before the Lomachenko-Linares fight, like, oh, what's your prediction for the fight? And I was like, I don't have one. They're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I don't really give out predictions. And he said, why? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't care. Like, that's really honest with you. I don't care. I just want to see great fights. I want to see these guys in the ring. Like, I don't really get caught up in who's going to win and trying to be right about this stuff. Like, I have a suspicion. I have a hunch. But really, how this started is, like, I don't care who wins. I want to see these guys fight. I want to see what it looks like. And I'm going to give both guys credit. I want people to be as hyped about fights as I am. And obviously, this is like, you know, no, you can't feel that way, but I really do. Like, I would write previews for fights, and I would spend hours and hours and hours writing previews. You know, I'd be writing in a notebook at work, you know, just like sneaking in notes on how I was going to preview a fight. And the way I was going to do that, or what I always looked at, is like, why does each guy have a shot to win this fight? And unless it was like just totally egregious, sort of like irresponsible matchmaking, there was a way to make this fight sound interesting, because I got myself interested for fights. And that's like, I've always felt like that's my job, is like, get people interested in fights. Like, there's always a storyline to look at. This is fun. But anyway, sometimes we get caught up in talking about ratings and fan bases and commentary, and it kind of detracts from, like, fighting or boxing is still really fun. And at the end of the day, that's what it's about. Not like a baseball game or anything, but, like, you know, actually being a fan of it. So anyway, moving on to this Munguia fight. Okay, so we could talk about the fight, but I would like to derail it a little bit, because...
Okay, let's see where this goes.
So I know you disagree, but I think that this fight was totally predictable. Like, I kind of suspected that Saddam Ali was just going to, you know, we're just going to find out. He's going to turn back into a pumpkin. He wasn't a good welterweight. And he beats Miguel Cotto, who's basically not Miguel Cotto anymore. I mean, he got rocked by a jab from a guy with no power at 147, fighting at 154. So, like, we're going to find out the truth. And Munguia, a big guy, he's a very big guy, goes in there and basically just destroys Saddam Ali. And
1 second, just, he's not that big. He's not, like, bigger than Jermell Charlo or Jared Hurd.
Yeah.
He's like... Jared, you know, that's huge. What don't a junior middleweight looks like, and Saddam Ali is not a junior middleweight. But anyway, yeah, continue. I find it strange so many people are talking about how he's a monster and gigantic. It's like, no, it's just like, he's a junior middleweight. Saddam Ali is way out. Continue.
I mean, he looked huge, and obviously when you're fighting a freaking
welterweight... Well, yeah, it was a cartoonish size difference.
Yeah, absolutely no, ridiculous. But he's big. He's 6 feet.
Yeah, I think Jared Hurd is.
I don't think. I know Hurd is very big for the division. Like, we all know that. But, like, he's bigger than Demetrius Andrade. He's bigger. I think he's bigger than Jermell Charlo as well. Yeah, Jermell Charlo is 5'11.
Anyway, you were in the middle of a hot take.
But anyway, I don't think it's that hot. It's more of those, like I just got a good idea of how to make boxing, like, just even more chaotic. But anyway, so first of all, Funny enough, HBO's got another world champion in a division that they don't have any options for that guy to fight, which is cool. You know, they don't have a big, deep stable at 154 unless they're going to bring Liam Smith back. But secondly, like, if Canelo wanted to, like, just full-on turn heel, like, actually, Canelo is probably Roman Reigns of boxing. But anyway, if Canelo wanted to turn full-on heel and just get everyone to hate him, he doesn't join the drug testing. And then when he signs up for the drug testing, he also notes that he will not be fighting Golovkin in September, but instead he'll fight Jaime Munguia. And then everyone's torn.
Like, I don't think that's that much of a stretch, though. Don't you think Jaime Munguia is going to end up with Golden Boy, even if he still is with Zamford? Like, doesn't that seem inevitable at this point?
I would think so, but the HBO did a really, really, really hard push on Munguia versus Golovkin, because I think they're anticipating that Canelo will not fight Golovkin. And in the event that he doesn't, they have Munguia as this opponent for Golovkin that's, like, interesting somehow. And obviously it's ridiculous because he beat up on a freaking welterweight. So
right,
obviously that makes him good
so
enough to
little.
To fight against Golovkin, one
right,
of the
exactly.
three best pound-for-pound fighters in the entire sport.
Yeah, I mean, Saddam Ali beat Miguel Cotto, whose arm was falling off, and Miguel Cotto was never even, I mean, yeah, it's just ludicrous. I mean, yeah. Did I interrupt a point you were getting to?
No.
I mean,
that's
just
basically
like,
it. I just thought it was funny,
just funny seeing the
to
reaction.
Myself.
Well, it's my take on this is just, it's frustrating that the sport is so fractured. Because again, so I looked up the height.
Oh, here we go, Eddie Hearn.
Is listed at 5'11". Jarrett Hurd is listed as 6'1 and a half, I think. 6'1". And Munguia is listed as 6 feet. But I just say, from being around Jermell Charlo, he is a very big guy. I know, you know, you're talking inches here, but just he's significant.
Oh,
I've been
always talking
next to Saddam Ali
inches.
And I've also been next to Jermell Charlo. Hashtag Roy Coin. But I mean, it's just enormously bigger. I mean, there's no comparison. I mean, Saddam Ali was not even a particularly big welterweight.
Yeah.
You know, we live in an era of a very big junior middleweight division. I mean, granted, you know, I said, oh, he's a junior middleweight. Yeah, I know, like, Austin Trout and guys like that are shorter. I mean, just there are currently a lot of big junior middleweights. So I just, like, the point is, though, when people are talking about Munguia as a monster, if you see him in the ring with Jermell Charlo, he's not going to be bigger than him. I mean,
no,
okay, even
it's
if he,
look
on paper,
like,
has a one-inch height advantage, they're going to look like they're the same size.
Yeah, it's going to look,
it's just
oh,
Saddam
even.
Ali was, yeah, exactly. Well, and yes, and...
Also, look, just to make this point, a year ago, Munguia fought at welterweight.
Well, he's also super young, so he's growing into his body.
Yeah, so he don't even got man bones yet.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. I'm not saying he's terrible necessarily, just really haven't seen anything from him. I mean, just regarding saying that you thought it was predictable he would beat Saddam Ali, I mean, I have to say, I'm not surprised, but it was just, given his record, he's just fought less than nothing in terms of his
right.
competition. You can't come ahead and say, oh, he's definitely going to be good. I mean, yeah, you can say that Saddam Ali is a very vulnerable junior middleweight. Oh, so here's my quick story about that. I don't remember. I might have already told this in the podcast, but I...
Has it been less than an hour, and this guy can't remember what he said?
Well, no, this would have been from a few months ago when Saddam Ali beat Miguel Cotto.
Yeah.
On press row, everyone was kind of just like, well, Saddam Ali won, but he's kind of a dead man walking. This was just kind of consensus talking to a bunch of guys because, like, you know, you have these monsters. This was still, people were still buzzing with Jermell Charlo having beaten Erickson Lubin with that crazy first round knockout. And just saying, you know, it's like, these guys at 154 are absolute killers. Like, what could Saddam Ali absolutely do against this? Because again, Saddam Ali was brought in as a dead body against Miguel Cotto just because Miguel Cotto couldn't do the job, get the job done, and allow Saddam Ali to do the job, excuse me, to use the wrestling parlance. Yeah, I mean, he was brought in as a jobber. I mean, he was supposed to get blown out in that fight. And just because he didn't doesn't mean that he's actually a legit junior middleweight titleist. Anyway, so to skip ahead.
That's a good
to
way
the,
to put it,
the story
though, dead
part,
man walking.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, what is this guy going to do? And so we were talking about that on press row, and that was kind of this consensus opinion after the fight. And, you know, usually it's like people are kind of some combination of writing up their pieces, packing their stuff up, and just like hanging out And we were all talking about that, like, you know, what is he going to do? So when I got over to the post-fight press conference, Dan Raphael was there, and he was just standing by himself. So just, I was like, you know, you just make conversation. Like, most of the guys are friendly, and I asked him, like, what is Saddam Ali going to do? I mean, I know people are saying this is a big win. You know, congratulations, you won a title. I mean, this is the pinnacle of his boxing career. But, you know, what can he possibly do in this division? And there's just, you know, who could they even get that he could beat? I mean, in terms of finding an opponent, you know, he's not really credible to move up to 160. Would he, you know, move down to 147 possibly? I mean, Lord knows you'd think. I mean, if Canelo is talking about fighting Mr. Curly Mustache, they don't care about the quality of opposition. But anyway, I asked, I'm drawing this out too much. I asked Dan Raphael, and he, like, kind of got angry at me about the question. And I guess, like, I didn't realize, but he had written a very pro, or he was going, like, a very pro Saddam Ali angle, which is funny when you live in these separate universes, because, like, again, you have on Showtime these murderous junior middleweights, and then on HBO they're just like, Saddam Ali is, you know, a junior, you know, they don't really talk about the rest of the universe in the competition. They just say, oh, he's a titleist, isn't that good, he's a titleist. Just pretend this competition doesn't exist. And Dan Raphael really kind of snapped at me. He's like, yeah, you know, he's going to defend the title on HBO, he'll be just fine, like, don't worry. And, you know,
yeah, but that's what happens when you're a goddamn shill.
Yeah,
when you basically just print what they tell you to print.
My shill logic. Yeah, exactly. I was like, you know, isn't it worth at least considering what the makeup of the weight class was? And I wasn't expecting that reaction from him. I was just kind of curious to see, because it's just, you know, kind of a dilemma promotionally. It's like, who can you even have Saddam Ali fight who's not going to knock him out at 154? And, you know,
and that's
I think I feel like, you know, valid asking the question, because Golden Boy was not able to succeed at doing that. They brought in a guy who was supposed to be able to, like, Saddam Ali was supposed to be able to beat. This was a voluntary title defense, and he got knocked out. So there you go. I feel
okay.
Kind of vindicated now.
Like, 3 or 4 weeks ago, we were like, hey, Jaime Munguia can't fight Golovkin. Like, that's bringing a lamb to slaughter. And then we're like, oh, but Saddam Ali, like, just think about that. Like, oh, but against Saddam Ali, Ali's the lamb to slaughter. And, like, that was my logic thinking about the fight before, is that Saddam Ali was a dead man walking. And, like, if they bring in a guy that's a natural 154 fighter who's got some size, like, I don't, like, this is a thought experiment. Like, how low would you have to go in the rankings till you found a guy that with similar size attributes to Munguia, Ali would beat? Like, we're talking, like, maybe page, like, 8 or 9 on BoxRec. We'd have to go way far.
Well, and they thought Munguia was that guy. I mean, he hasn't fought anyone.
Yeah, but that speaks to the point of Ali just never had a chance. And then you go back to the story of Comey knocking this dude out. Like, I didn't want to say this before the Cotto Ali fight, okay? But you went and you did a lot of interviews with Saddam Ali, and you got video of the interviews. And I watched all of them. And he slurs when he talks. This is before the Cotto fight. He slurs when he talks. And I don't know if he's got
was,
a natural like lisp or something.
I got that video. But yeah, it's kind of alarming. Well, I'll let you finish. I have something to add to this already, but go on.
No, but that was my point. Like, Saddam, Ali just does not sound good. And it totally could be, like, that's just how he talks. Like, it's okay. Like, Brandon Rios has always kind of talked like that. But, you know, obviously now you can hear
it's
it.
It's pretty alarming, too.
But Saddam Ali kind of had that a little bit, and it's like, that guy getting knocked out, like, just putting it all together, it's like, it makes sense, totally. Anyway, you can finish your thought. We got to get this going.
Oh, cause... yeah, my last thought on this, something which was hilarious, you know, I told you earlier that someone who works out in Saddam Ali's gym said they saw him get knocked out by Richard Comey multiple times leading up to this fight. Something that was hilarious, separately leading up to the Cotto fight, I interviewed one of Saddam Ali's sparring partners for that fight, Bakhtiar Ayubov. There's an interview on YouTube about that. I was talking to him separately and just said, you know, what's your pick? And I don't remember if this is in the YouTube video or not, but he said, yeah, he picked Saddam Ali to get knocked out in the Cotto fight. You know, meanwhile, he's his sparring partner. So something's wrong with Saddam Ali's camp if everyone's going around telling him he's going to get telling people he's going to get knocked out. I mean, he was not respected even among his own team, which is... you know, again, it's like people forget, like, Cotto was absolutely at the end of his career, had his arm get badly damaged. It was still a semi, you know, it was still a somewhat competitive fight. I mean, this was not a foundation for this was never going to be a foundation for Saddam Ali to go out. And let me just relate to an earlier point very quickly, and then I know we want to keep going. But when you were talking about, you know, frustration of when a TV show only promotes one fighter, I mean, that's my biggest pet peeve of, like, what are we even watching? When you're presenting an event boxing? Where it only matters if one guy wins. Well, I mean, at least just pretend it's competitive. Pretend, you know, the other guy has a story. Like I said, I always try to take that stance of, you know, giving the opponent the benefit of the doubt. I mean, they have their own story, too. I mean, part of this you get from being part of the press, and like I said, from seeing people in the gym, too. But it was just like, oh, God. I don't know. I mean, you have to know what the actual narrative is here. And it's like, as per that, you know, this is sort of the opposite of that, but it's along the same lines. It's like, the truth here is Saddam Ali was never going to be a valid junior middleweight. And it's just, you know, it's very strange. Okay, he got the win over Miguel Cotto, but, you know, Golden Boy was going to see how far they could string this along, and it was just never going to work out. I mean, if he was going to do anything, he should have moved down to 147. Possibly could have had a fight with Lucas Matisse. Granted, those aren't great options, but how much could he possibly have gotten paid to get obliterated by Jaime Munguia?
Dude.
I mean, how did this help his life in any way?
Either Cotto or Ali against Matisse is a great fight. Like, that does numbers. Not the greatest numbers, but it does numbers. And you're going to see that with Pacquiao versus Matisse. I mean, it's certainly better to do those numbers than get destroyed by freaking Jaime Munguia. And, like, we say that, but I do want to put some respect on his name. Because, look, like, he did what he was supposed to do. He's supposed to be a big guy that punched hard. Like, that's literally all he's supposed to do.
He might end up being good. I don't think we quite know that yet. You know, he's very young. Maybe he is a real prospect.
It's likely he's not, but yeah, he might be.
Yeah, I mean, he hadn't done enough to indicate that in this fight. I mean, still, it's like, you know, just another quick take on this fight. I mean, something that was interesting. You can always tell when a fighter is coming up, they sort of can develop a temperament based on their quality of opposition. You can sometimes see a fighter who will become totally reliant on power punches and just going for the knockout if they're fighting completely overmatched opponents. Like, you've talked about this with Luke Campbell, where Luke Campbell, you know, sort of believed his own hype and thought he could knock everyone out, reach the world level. It was not true. I mean, Munguia is fighting out.
I would love to see him go fight Golovkin with that mindset.
Well, that's exactly. So Jaime Munguia has been fighting guys with absolutely no chance in Mexico. He's been fighting, you know, Mexican domestic scene. And, you know, he's just been able to walk through those guys because he hasn't had any opposition in front of him. And that was all he needed to do against Saddam Ali. I mean, he got clipped. He got hit by some very flush shots, but he was fighting a welterweight and it didn't matter. Yeah, it would be a hilarious slaughter if he fought, you know, again, he's young, he has time to develop, but if he fought a you know, talking about at 154, Jermall Charlo, I think even Jared Hurd, or, you know, if they try to move him up to middleweight with, let's be honest, that is almost certainly going to happen. You don't think they're going to want to have, you know, Golovkin fight a Mexican fighter to try to get in some of those Mexican holiday action if he can't fight Canelo? You don't think Canelo is going to want an all-Mexico showdown? I mean, because, you know, there's a parallel story. Canelo is very prominent when he was younger. He also won his first title at a very young age. You know, that's a storyline they'll love to build. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of business coming out of Munguia. You know, again,
well, yeah, I see him as an opponent for either Golovkin, Canelo. They might throw him in with Spike O'Sullivan, maybe as the undercard for one of Canelo's fights, and he could also get a Lemieux fight. Like, who doesn't want to see Munguia fight
this?
Lemieux?
Why don't they have him fight? He'll move up to 160. Have him fight Gabe Rosado on the undercard of Canelo Golovkin.
Okay, that is a stupid idea.
So you got okay.
Why doesn't he fight? Just going? Have him fight Glenn Tapia then.
Hey, why not?
Because I think you
Golden
can put
Boy
him in
still
with Lemieux.
Glenn Tapia on his cards. So no, take his time. He's only 22. So let's have him fight Glenn Tapia. How does that fight go?
Have him
fight Gabe Rosado. How does that fight go?
He
then
stops
have him fight
both.
Canelo. Hey, you got yourself a pay-per-view opponent at that point. So the point is, it doesn't even matter if he's good. You know, what is it that Bruce Pritchard says, like, and then the bell rang? You know, speaking of some of these guys in WWE who would have a great look but just absolutely could not wrestle and it would all fall apart. The point is, Munguia doesn't even have to end up being good, and he can still be developed into a pay-per-view opponent for one of those guys. Because, you know, put him in with Spike O'Sullivan, Gabriel Rosado, Glenn Tapia. Again, why not? What about Jason Quigley? Put him in with Jason Quigley.
Because they think Jason Quigley's actually going to be good. They won't fight him.
Or are they developing for exactly the same purpose as Munguia? You know, an opponent for Canelo to get like, slaughtered at some point.
I agree that Munguia should be developed.
Anyone fighting Spike O'Sullivan, if they actually had Golovkin fighting Vannes Martirosyan, right? They're showing us that the quality of these opponents does not matter. HBO will broadcast anything. All of these guys can be in the pay-per-view pipeline for Golovkin and Canelo.
Right, but I'm not looking from will HBO broadcast this or not, because it's easy enough to get them to broadcast a fight. What I'm looking for is Canelo's future, because obviously he's the biggest draw in boxing, and that's the fight everyone wants. Like, I've actually submitted letters to Golden Boy that I can get the fight, and HBO has said they would broadcast it based off of their previous fights that they broadcasted this year. So I can definitely see Munguia being used, and it just really depends on the option that HBO has, because I don't think Golden Boy, and while it's likely Munguia ends up with Golden Boy, I believe there's a good chance that he will, his promoter won't let him out. Because I think he's promoted by Zanfer right now.
Yeah, but they've done work with Golden Boy.
Oh, for sure they have.
I could see them carrying an option on it, but just cooperating.
Yeah, and that
you
would
don't
be...
need to have a clean break there. That would still make them the most money. I mean, was he going to go back to Mexico and fight more cab drivers, or start making, you know, six-figure, seven-figure purses fighting in America with Golden Boy and HBO? I mean, I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he's going to stick around.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Huey Fury fought Sam Sexton. Is there anything you want to say about this? You have one sentence.
I didn't watch it.
Okay, good.
I have nothing to
say
about
it. That's all you get. That's two sentences. I told you one. Devin Haney versus Mason Menard. You get one sentence.
Haney is coming along. Uh-huh. He looks good.
Uh-huh.
He had a big step up. He got the knockout. He's been another meme machine like Ryan Garcia. It's still very early. The win over Menard doesn't mean that much. Ray Beltran just knocked him out, but it's good. And, it's, you know, he's another guy to be excited about going forward. He's got a lot of physical talent. He's got a lot of, you know, in-ring talent, and he's just going to keep developing. Yeah. I like what I see from him.
Yeah. I've really been on Devin Haney since he turned pro, and he was fighting on Top Rank undercards a couple years ago. But I just saw a really talented guy. I think, you know, he's still really young, so it's going to take some time. But he's a guy that if they take their time with, they might have something on their hands. There's no need to rush Haney at this point. I know that's what everybody wants to do, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'd been pretty mixed. I mean, I'd seen a number of his fights that went the distance against absolutely dead body opponents. And, you know, granted, he was very young at that point. I mean, he was, you know, this is when you're talking about, it's like 17, 18, and he's only 19 now. And I think I'm starting to see something where, you know, it looks like, oh, you know, this guy might actually go somewhere, and he's not just fighting super overmatched opponents and winning thanks to physical talent. Like, it looks like he's actually, you know, on a trajectory here.
You know what we forgot to talk about is the Hovhannessian and Ray Vargas fight.
I did not watch that either.
Ooh.
I watched the entire PBC card. I watched the Showbox card. I did not watch that one fight.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a Ray Vargas guy.
Okay.
Ray Vargas guy.
Me either. I can't stand Ray Vargas. And that's why you have to watch the fight.
Okay.
So first of all,
Lomachenko-Linares
was a great fight, no doubt about it. Fought at a super high pace. Okay? And it probably wasn't as good of a fight as the Vargas versus Hovhannessian fight, because that fight had legit drama in it. Like, it was actually just kind of wild, the style that Hovhannessian fought in, and then the fact that Ray Vargas was like impervious to it. And he, at times, he was able to outbox him, but he just kept getting drawn into exactly what Hovhannessian wanted to do, which was like channel his inner Vic Darchinian and just slug it out. And I say that because he's Armenian, and Vic Darchinian is Armenian as well. So it was just a wild fight. It's a really good slugfest. It literally feels like, you know, it feels like a video game fight where, like, there's no possible way that Hovhannessian is going to keep throwing haymakers after, you know, two rounds. And it's like, oh, no, he's hurt again. It's talking about Vargas. Like, he wobbles Vargas a couple of times in the fight. It's a great fight. I totally was, like, not expecting much. Like, the moment I saw Ray Vargas, I totally forgot Ray Vargas on the undercard. And I'm like, ah, Jesus, Ray Vargas. And I just told my girlfriend, she's like, how many more fights are left? And I'm like, oh, there's just one fight on this card. And then so I turned it on and I see Ray Vargas in the ring, and it was just like, oh God. And it turned out to be a great fight. I was really happy with that fight. It's just a ton of fun, is what it is. It's not like the most technical masterpiece, but it's definitely a fun fight.
Well, you sold me on it. I'll check it out.
Yeah, definitely. It was a lot of fun. Like the chat wasn't like watching. I guess everybody forgot boxing was on after the Lomachenko Linares fight, and then everyone who turned it on liked it. Getting on to some new stuff. Okay, we're not going to really talk about anything here.
Oh, very quick. Good undercard fight on the top rank card, though. Did you enjoy that one?
No, I wasn't home. I didn't get home in
Adames versus
time.
Barrera.
I got home just in
Yeah,
time for the main event.
it was a good fight, competitive. Barrera, I only knew because he had been a Spence opponent. He at that time was trained
Yeah.
by Nacho Berristein. He landed a couple uppercuts on Spence en route to getting his jaw broken and really just getting like really pretty brutally beaten up. Adames, I heard that one apparently top rank was pretty crazy on the commentary also, although I didn't see it. That was what I heard online. People were really talking him up. Sean actually from the chat said that he's got a really good reputation in the New York gyms. I heard that from the press row people from the sort of same group I heard from, like, Saddam Ali camp spy. I was saying that Adama's done really good work in the gym. Crawford apparently vouched for him when Crawford had done some time at Gleason's. But didn't look super impressive to me, looked very limited. I mean, he's a guy who had only really fought in the Dominican Republic, and he looked like that, like he really lacked seasoning. Tried to win the fight just on pure aggression and ended up Barrero's kind of able to make it ugly, get back into it. It was a fight which possibly could have gone Barrera's way if it had been a 12-round fight, or at least that's what it looked like to me, that Barrera might have been able to do something, at least, win those rounds, if not get a knockout. I don't remember what the actual scorecards were, if he was actually on the judges' cards in it to win it, but at least on my card, he would have been if he had been able to play with those two rounds. I believe, actually. I need to fact check my own scorecard here, but
Fact check
yeah, fun
yourself.
fight. Just wanted to shout out to that. I mean, I don't want to, credit to Top Rank. It didn't look like a great undercard fight on paper for the other televised fight, but it was very fun.
Yeah, and also Tony Harrison won a split decision over Ishae Smith. It's like, can anyone get a clean win over Ishae Smith? Like, he's like.
Well, that's why he keeps fighting. Yeah, did you watch the fight?
No.
It was a pretty fun fight. Definitely looked like Harrison was going to get the stoppage. And then meanwhile, flash forward to the last round, or fast forward to the last round, and Ishae Smith like was totally in it and having some success. So, yeah, I mean, Ishae Smith is perfectly serviceable gatekeeper at this point. I'm not really sure where Tony Harrison goes from here, but there are some guys at kind of the middle of 154 on the PBC side. Like I could see him fighting J Rock, some fight like that. Maybe Erickson Lubin on Erickson Lubin's road back. So, yeah, I mean, both those guys will keep getting work. Definitely was not a fantastic card. I know I can be pretty heavily boosting the PBC side of thing. I don't want to like say that this card was something that it wasn't, but it was a pretty fun fight, which I got to watch on bounce in standard definition, which as I was saying on the chat was completely surreal in 2018 to be watching Ishae Smith headline a card and in standard definition on bounce. It was quite a flashback to like 2004.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask if you thought it was hilarious, at least as hilarious as I did, that Michael Conlan fought a guy who's 10-1 and won a decision.
That was horrendous. That, oh my God. I don't, I think I just said I respect all fighters. I'm not going to shit on a fighter, but that was brutal. I mean, he did not get out of first gear in that fight. Michael Conlan, we're talking about Devin Haney has time to develop. Ryan Garcia, who fought last week, we're saying has time to develop. He's only 19.
Conlan's
Michael Conlan's
26.
26. Yeah, get your shit together, Michael Conlan. Like, I don't know where his pro career goes from here. Like, he's fighting this level and can't distinguish himself. I am not bright on his future at all.
He's got Adilson dos Santos next, who got knocked out by Jesse Magdaleno in 2 rounds. We'll see how he does next. And I'm just
Right, I
looking
mean.
at Dos Santos's box rec, and in his last fight, he fought in Russia. Do you know what the gym he or the arena or whatever it was that he fought in? Do you know what it's called?
I can't wait to hear.
Never guess. It's called Floyd Mayweather Boxing Academy.
Oh my God. I think I remember that. Didn't Floyd Mayweather do like a goodwill tour in Russia a few years ago? And that was, I think Roy Jones did a similar thing as well. That's pretty funny.
I like the little circus noise you got in the background.
Oh, sorry. That was my water boiler. I've been trying to be very cute with the mute button here to try to get chores done during the podcast, but apparently I had the mute button off at the wrong time.
Listen, there's no chores during the podcast. The podcast is a chore.
Give it the respect it deserves.
Well, no, seriously, what chores are you doing?
I was just putting water in the water boiler and making some chamomile tea.
Anyway. Jesus Christ, Tom, the legend grows. So we did an entire podcast on the DAZN. I've officially announced that I'm not calling it DAZN. I'm going to call it DAZN. The DAZN Matchroom deal, the $1 billion deal. We did an entire podcast on that. So I don't really feel like we should talk about
it. I'm not really
sure
who wins there with the mispronunciation, but I'll allow it.
DAZN. It sounds better than DAZN. Like, you look at DAZN and you don't get DAZN. You get DAZN.
I don't know. It probably makes sense in Germany. I mean, that's like hashtag Dazen. Global brand. You'll end up with a lot of goofy shit if you're trying to please people in every country around the world. But there's all kinds of crazy shit in Europe like that. I don't know. Are there any? Yeah, we definitely spent more than enough time talking about it. Was there any other news that trickled out afterwards or any updates?
I don't think so. I think we were right about some things.
Yeah, I would definitely be fine to not go. Well, also, we were very clear that this was based on the... Like, I saw someone had posted, I think, in the response to the podcast, in an LA Times article where Eddie Hearn was calling out like purses for different fight cards, all that stuff's speculation. If you look at like what Eddie Hearn actually said, he said, oh, well, you know, this card could be a $16 million card and this card could be an $8 million card. And
yeah,
that's just that none of that stuff is set in stone. I mean, like, you know, we just saw that it's like there's news of Anthony Joshua getting a $100 million extension on his Matchroom deal. It's like, you know, when they say $1 billion partnership, that could mean 1,000 different things. I mean, you know, again, you could have a fighter who has, you know, a long-term contract or was paid in advance or something like this. And then they end up, you know, saying it's like, oh, this is X dollars amount of, you know, I mean, Lord knows how are they going to count the Anthony Joshua fights that are in Europe worth tens of millions of dollars, but here are worth about $1 million. You know,
yeah.
The accounting is going to be interesting to see as far as how much money is actually changing hands and what that means in terms of actual fighter purses. I mean, which is really, that's sort of what it comes down to. What matters is the fighter purses, because that will dictate who is actually fighting, what kind of fights actually happen.
Yeah.
And we still don't know that. So
yeah, and we won't know for a long time. Like, we won't know until purses actually get reported, because we have promoters right now where we don't know what the hell they're doing. We don't know what the hell Top Rank is doing right now. The one thing that we were right about that was speculation, that, or at least I think I speculated on, is that Perform Group is going to have ownership stake in Matchroom USA, and that is a fact. They will have ownership stake. And the one thing that is interesting about that is how they're going to skirt around violating the Ali Act, because the Ali Act has a provision in it about the relationship between broadcasters and boxers. So that's something I've researched, and it just seems like
it's actually a really good point.
If someone can make a case, like, look, the Ali Act is really hard to win lawsuits against. And secondly, the only people with the firepower to file those kind of lawsuits, they've one settled out of court and the other one lost recently. So it'll be interesting to see if
stronger
someone...
precedent against someone bringing another lawsuit. You know,
yeah.
It's not just neutral. It's like, now that's actually precedent to look at this one.
Yeah. I wrote that we maybe could talk about Zuffa boxing, but like, who cares? Like, basically, the whole gist of it was, like, people keep saying that Zuffa Boxing could use Matchroom's deal with DAZN to broadcast their fights, and it's like, maybe, but I don't think so. I think Matchroom is going to try to promote their own cards. Maybe, but I don't think so. The other thing, Mikey Garcia is confirmed to be fighting Robert Easter Jr. at the end of July. That'll be here in L.A., most likely at the Staples Center. The Staples Center is on hold for that date, and it was put on hold by none other than one, I think it was TGB that put it on hold. So, you know, that's damn well a PBC card, and it's likely that fight, which is very cool for me because I live in L.A., so I will go to that fight. And what is there to talk about? Like, Robert Easter Jr. is going to ineffectively use his length and reach for 12 rounds and basically get outboxed by Mikey Garcia?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it's a lot of the shine has come off Robert Easter. I have to say, still, it'll be interesting to see how Mikey Garcia deals with the size. I mean, that's the thing,
Yeah.
unfortunately, we've seen a bunch of people now deal with Robert Easter's size. But, you know, he's still undefeated, lightweight titleist, this unification. You know, we start to get into a really interesting discussion of who's number one at 135. Mikey currently has a belt. I
It's
would
not a
certainly rank him
discussion.
number one at 135 over Lomachenko, but well, you say that, but Lord knows there are going to be legions of fanboys who think otherwise.
If
So,
you're a fanboy, you don't, your opinion doesn't count. I don't
well,
care. If you are a
they're
fanboy, your
certainly
opinion
loud.
has
They
no
certainly,
merit.
Lord knows they write a lot of comments on my Facebook
Sure, they can do that, but
videos.
they're also fanboys. If you're, yeah, like, if you're a fanboy, you have to. I mean, look, your way out is to admit you've got a problem. And if you admit that, like, I'm biased, then you it really. Your opinions will improve. Like, you can just say, like, well, you know, I love them. And, like, look, I'm the same way. You know, like, I love the Lakers. So naturally, to me, in the modern NBA, they're the greatest franchise out there. And Jerry Buss is the greatest owner in professional team sports that there's ever been. And Kobe Bryant is rated higher all time than he probably is objectively. And Magic, too, as well, even though Magic is like one of the top three greatest players of all time. And, you know, people just don't put respect on his name. But, you know, I can be objective. And LeBron is on his way. You know, obviously, I'm talking about basketball on this, but I just want to take it off of boxing so you can see it elsewhere. I think it might help because if we just stick in boxing, like, you know, I think people are just going to dig their heels in about it. But Mikey Garcia is the best lightweight in the world and happens to also be the best super lightweight in the world. Same way Lomachenko is the best light super featherweight in the world. And he's the best featherweight in the world if he can make that weight still. I know damn well he's going to beat everyone at 126 and 130. So anyway,
Well,
135 is the
boy,
ceiling.
there's a lot of stuff to unpack here. But
No, there's nothing to
yeah, I mean, just to get
unpack.
back
There's
to it, to
nothing
get
to
the
unpack.
original. Well, okay, so
What
first
I said
off,
was all a fact.
well, one thing, how does the Linares performance on Saturday night, does that change your opinion of how Gervonta Davis would do against Lomachenko at 130?
I think
Do you think, I
no,
mean,
it
do you really
doesn't.
think that's a blowout? I mean, I think that's a
No.
good fight. I'd love to
No,
see
I
Gervonta fight
think no,
Lomachenko, and
look.
even more so after that performance on Saturday night.
You mentioned blowout. I never said blowout. I said Lomachenko's going to beat these guys. At
Hey,
the end of
that's
the
how
day,
you
he
win an
comes
argument.
away.
You put the words in the mouth of the person you're talking to, give them that straw man argument, and force them to defend themselves. Anyway, continue.
Lomachenko obviously beats Gervonta Davis, and he beats a lot of guys just based off of the fact that he's more active. A Gervonta Davis fight, I think how it plays out is that Lomachenko is going to eat shots, no doubt about it, because Gervonta is going to throw him, and he's just as fast, if not just a little bit slower than Lomachenko. And he's young and has got more, just as much athleticism as well. The conditioning, not so much. But so ultimately, Lomachenko does have stuff to think about in that fight. But on paper, he has Gervonta Davis beat in every regard except one punch power. But other than
Well,
that,
don't you think
he.
Davis is a harder puncher than Linares?
Yeah, and that's what I just said, that he has more, like, if we're comparing all their attributes, the only thing I give Davis is one punch power. He has that over Lomachenko. And that's it.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, my point was, though, that Linares was able to knock down Lomachenko. So what does Davis do to Lomachenko?
Well, the weight difference, it has to come into play here. I don't think that Davis could get Lomachenko in that position. I don't think he's clever enough to set up a right hand and walk Davis into, or sorry, walk Lomachenko into a right hand. I just don't think that happens. And I like Davis, and he's, you know, a very good fighter, but there's levels to this, and he ain't on that level. He's on a
Well,
very high
anyway,
level, but he ain't on Lomachenko's level. We're talking
can you hear
about.
me, by the way? I'm having an issue with my headphones.
No, I can hear you.
Can you hear me? Okay, yeah. Yeah, I think it's maybe a more interesting than you're giving credit for. But just to the point of, we got up way off on a tangent. I was just saying, to me, Mikey Garcia fighting Easter, Lomachenko at 135, suddenly the division is very hot. You know, you already had a bunch of fun guys there, but it'll be really interesting to see how this goes, that you have one unification fight already announced for the end of July. Lomachenko, at least going into Saturday night, was announced to be back at the end of August. So unless he got, you know, injured in some way we don't know about during the Linares fight, he's presumably going to be back, and his most likely opponent just is Ray Beltran. Yeah. He lost his smile. you know, then you're going to have two unification fights. That sets the stage possibly for a four belt unification. And then, you know, even if that fight doesn't happen, and Lord knows there are promotional difficulties that could keep it apart, that's going to be a really fun story to follow. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not quick to dismiss that at all. I mean, I think that's going to be really fun. And, you know, yeah, I framed it as who's number one at 135. In my mind, also, it's Mikey Garcia, but I'm not going to say that's a given or that people aren't going to try to argue about that. And Lord knows, I think ESPN and Top Rank, and well, Top Rank with ESPN's muscle behind them, are going to be arguing in favor of Lomachenko. And wouldn't that be awesome if that's a fight that gets built up on ESPN? I mean, I would love to see that happen over the next year or so, or next, you know, hopefully more like 6 months. But if it's the next year, a build up to Mikey Garcia Lomachenko, I would love to see that story develop.
Well, sure. One, I don't care about what ESPN has to say or what Top Rank has to say, because they clearly have a narrative, and I don't care what other people have, or I don't think other people care about what other people have to say, because they would go listen to their podcasts. So you have to give a point of view. Your point of view.
I mean, I have nothing more to say on this topic, but it's just, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know what you're dismissing. I mean, it's big four boxing if people on ESPN shows are saying Mikey Garcia and Lomachenko in the same sentence. You know, less so if it's just Lomachenko because he fights on their network. More so if it's, you know, talking about an actual fun matchup. Not that exciting if they're talking about Lomachenko, you know, leading up to an inevitable win over Beltran. I mean, can we talk about the Beltran fight for a second, or do you have more to say about it? I don't think we talked about
that. No, I just wanted to move on.
Sure, go ahead.
I think we mentioned the Beltran fight earlier, that's probably what's next, the unification with Beltran.
I just want to give my very quick jag on that, you know, we've been complaining about that for months, that fight was coming, and just complaining that it's just so cynical that Beltran has just been set up to lose, that he, you know, won a belt so Crawford could take it from him, now he's won a belt that Lomachenko can take from him, and then just, you know, the storyline would be, it seems interesting because Beltran went the distance with Crawford. He's got some one-punch knockouts in his last few fights, but if you look a little below the surface, he, in his last few fights, has failed a drug test, you know, failed to make weight, been knocked down, been cut badly. So, and also the Crawford fight where he went the distance was 4 years ago. So, you know, if you look a little below the surface, it's a pretty bad fight. So if we could get, you know, start talking about the Mikey Garcia thing as soon as possible, that's what I want.
I'm with that. Like, obviously there's nothing to, notion that you're like saying, making this case that Mikey isn't 135 and your evidence was other people, specifically fanboys and ESPN and Top Rank. We're going to say that. And that's just stupid. They can say that, but like, we are not them, and we're talking about our point of view, and I think we have a more objective point of view about that. And I think the objective point of view is that Mikey's clearly number one at 135, because we all think that Mikey would have blown out Linares, and Linares wouldn't have been even in a fight with Garcia where Garcia had stopped him. It wouldn't have looked like the fight we saw last night. So anyway, moving on, Sergey Kovalev versus Eliezer Alvarez is confirmed for August 4th. So that, if you're not keeping track here, that's Garcia Easter on one weekend, and then the following weekend is Kovalev versus Alvarez. So that's cool. But we have another light heavyweight fight to talk about, and that's Adonis Stevenson versus Badu Jack. This is the old man with a lot of power versus the also fairly old man in Badu Jack, who's on the rise. Where do you stand on this one? I think of all the fights that we've got coming up, this one is like really split, like legitimately split on what people think.
Yeah, I absolutely love this fight. I have a hard time just, I mean, I have to, I will always pick with the guy I'm rooting for better. Actually, that's not true. But in this fight, I will, and just say, I mean, I love the comeback of Badu Jack. He suffered that first round knockout loss. You know, I saw it happen on Showbox. Couldn't believe when it was happening. very happy to see his road back. I love his body work. Reoccurring thing I've said, I mean, there are certain fighters I just really like watching their offensive output. He's one of those guys that just likes I really like the way he does his work. And it's great to see him going in with Adonis Stevenson. I think Stevenson is a guy who's shown a lot of flaws.
In and out really, of the ring.
Well, oh God. Yeah. Let's not get into his out of the ring antics. Yeah, and I mean, both guys have first round knockouts on their records, so there's a vulnerability there. So really, you think like you could see someone get hurt. You could definitely see Badu Jack get hurt by one of Stevenson's left hands. At the same time, you could see it become a nightmare for Adonis Stevenson in the middle rounds and going down the stretch. I mean, I think if Badu Jack is able to get away from that left hand, which I certainly think he will be. I think he's definitely the best opponent Adonis mm-hmm. Stevenson has faced in years, if not mm-hmm. ever, if you consider the condition of Chad Dawson when he fought him. I think it's going to be a really, really rough night for Adonis Stevenson. I think, I don't know, I got asked to do a prediction for a press release, and I think my line was something like, Badu Jack is exactly the fighter who's going to make Adonis Stevenson finally feel his age, and... Yeah, I think it's going to be a rough night for Adonis Stevenson. I think you're going to see him possibly get stopped, definitely beaten up down the stretch in that fight. How do you see it? Anything different?
Yeah, that's actually... So I don't want to say... I don't have anything to add
to
what you said.
Yeah, I know you don't do your predictions. Yeah, we know.
But what I will say is the storyline here that I really like is... Badu Jack is what you would call... What they call in like other sports, like a lunch pail guy. Like, it's just pure blue-collar, grit, hard work. He just goes in there he doesn't do anything special. He just works really hard and outworks his opponents. At the end of the day, you're not going to see him, like, on the highlights. You know, he's not going to land the flashy shots. But what he is going to do is do enough to win. He's going to get the job done. And then you have a guy like Adonis Stevenson, who's the complete opposite. He's very flashy. If you have forgotten what it's like to watch Adonis Stevenson fight, and I don't blame you if you have, because he doesn't fight very frequently. He's a guy that is fairly, like, at least his attempt is to be fairly slick. And he lands flashy shots, big left hands. And he's very fast for a guy that's his age and at 175. So you have a contrast in styles that makes this fascinating. I think it's basically what you said. It's either the Stevenson left or Jack's hard work. That's how we determine the winner. Now, saying all that, these fights that look predictable don't usually go predictably. Where we have two predictable outcomes, they don't usually go this way, especially if they're 50-50. It's usually the thing that we don't see coming, like Kovalev outboxing Hopkins. And I wonder if this is one of those fights where we see it again, where it's like, the outcome is the one we don't see coming right now. And that's, what is that, like Stevenson outboxing Jack for 12 rounds? It's not unheard of. I think Stevenson tries too hard to knock guys out to like really outbox guys. So I don't know who's going to win this fight. I legitimately think it's 50-50. And I'll leave it at that because, you know, you and I both kind of said similar things. And then the same night, we have Gary Russell Jr.
We're both looking forward to it. I mean, very good fight, but yeah, nothing really more to say about the breaking it down.
The same night, you have Gary Russell Jr. versus Jojo Diaz, which is a really good fight as well. You have two guys who have proven basically nothing in their careers. Gary Russell Jr. has proven that he's fast, but we saw against Lomachenko that the speed is not effective speed. It's basically arm-punching speed. And unless he catches guys and they can't take this, like basically being hit so much, it doesn't work out well for them. And then you have Jojo Diaz, who I think is a decent offensive fighter, but defensively there are a lot of flaws. He doesn't have the power that he thinks he has. And so I think Russell should be the favorite here. I don't have any doubt about that. But you know, again, I can see either result, but I think Russell is the favorite and should be, and rightfully should be the favorite.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to this one. I don't think there's a clear favorite. I'd be interested to see what the betting odds are, if they're even out there. I mean, I know it's not the biggest fight, but it's just, it's always exciting when you have, you know, Jojo Diaz, sentimental favorite, U.S. Olympian. I've actually watched a number of his early fights in the last few months. I made a lot of Spence highlight footage over, like, winter to Christmas time, Christmas break. I had some time on my hands leading up to the Lamont Peterson fight, and Jojo Diaz fought in a lot of the same fights, so I download one of those old FS1 cards, get to see both of them do their work, and Jojo Diaz, you know, sort of took for granted how impressive he looked early on. Yeah. He has kind of topped out, though, you know, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of that does have to do with what you said. He hasn't really shown power at the highest level. The knockouts he has have really been against asterisks hyped guys, where they've really shown that, you know, if they haven't been knocked out before, they've been knocked down, that they're guys with weak chins. Hasn't been in a lot of heavy competition. And, you know, out of all the guys from the 2012 Olympics, he's had just about the slowest road at this point. I don't, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm trying to think who else there is from the 2012 Olympics that we're still kind of waiting for to get a title shot. So
Jamel Harry.
Well, I'm not going to, yeah, I'm not going to relitigate that one, but, yeah, he'll get there eventually, I guess. But as far as, yeah, undefeated guys from 2012, yeah, interesting to see what he can do, though. I mean, Gary Russell Jr. is interesting. He's another guy I really like, maybe more than he deserves. I think, you know, you make a good point when you speak of, you know, he's got fast hands, but it's all arm punching. It's not really effective punches. I think it's been kind of interesting how he's sort of come back into favor with people since the Lomachenko loss. I think part of that was he had a really well-timed, for the sake of his career, well-timed win over Johnny Gonzalez. Gonzalez had knocked out Abner Mares, and then Abner Mares, you know, for whatever reason, if it was purely mental or if it was managerially, you know, it was business-related, they couldn't make a deal. Abner Mares did not get the rematch against Johnny Gonzalez. Seemed like he didn't want it, so that made it really impressive when Gary Russell took the fight and then absolutely annihilated Johnny Gonzalez. Meanwhile, Johnny Gonzalez is completely done by that point, and you know, he's been complete, you know, totally inactive. So, you know, when you talked about this, I hate to compare it to the Saddam Ali fight from this weekend, but I mean, I really wouldn't be surprised by any outcome in this fight. I could see either guy winning. I could see either guy coming on strong. It's kind of hard for me to imagine either guy getting a knockout. I guess that would be surprising to me, but I mean, I could see either guy winning close, or I could see either guy winning really strongly, just because there are so many question marks about both. They're both guys who seem to have talent, but have both underwhelmed. And in the case of Gary Russell, it's just his inactivity has been so extreme. You really have to wonder how much that's eroded even, you know, what he would have had on his best day.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised with any outcome other than a really wide Diaz win. I find it, even Lomachenko didn't have a super wide win over Russell. Like, Russell just throws too much and too fast that judges have a hard time not giving him some rounds and giving him credit that maybe he doesn't deserve just because of the speed. So I'm leaning Russell, but I'm definitely not counting out Diaz because... And it's not because I think Diaz is super good. I know he's a decent fighter, but I just don't know about Russell. It's Russell that, like, basically this is Russell's fight to win or lose. Let's move on. We have Romero Duno versus Gilberto Gonzalez headlining a Golden Boy ESPN card, like Wednesday or Thursday. I think it's Thursday. And then we have in Japan on Sunday, Ryoichi Taguchi fighting Heikki Budler. Former minimum weight champion. And then Saturday, I just jumped around because I'm just going to mention those. But then we have Lee Selby versus Josh Warrington. And you got to give the like one or two sentence take on this fight, if you have one.
God. Whoever wins, they won't beat anyone in the top five at 126.
Ooh. Like, yeah, that's well said. Not one that I agree with. But I definitely can see you having that point of view. That's either because you don't like either guy, or you just haven't seen enough of either guy. And obviously, I think Lee Selby wins. And I think Lee Selby could beat Abner Morris. I think he could beat. I actually think he might beat Oscar Valdez. Like, Lee Selby is the kind of guy that makes things hard for guys like Valdez and Mahrez. And don't even try. I love Valdez. So don't even try to say, like, I'm being, like, super biased or something, or I'm overrating Selby. I'm not. This is purely me. Like, and I actually think Selby could beat Frampton. And again,
Wow.
don't even
You
try
must be
this because,
Selby's biggest fan
no,
outside
I'm
the
not a fan of
UK.
Selby. I can't stand him. But I also, I'm not gonna, like, discredit anybody just because I don't like him. Styles make fights. And Selby is a guy that struggles against guys who just are reckless. But at the same time, he has a style that makes it obvious that he beats those guys. He's like a guy that's gonna try to be slick and outbox you and outpoint you. And unless you land a ton of punches and go balls to the wall, he's is going to outpoint you. And Warrington has no power. So like if Selby, even if Warrington was just like teeing off on him, like I think Selby will still find a way to win this fight. But it, for storyline's sake, like I followed Josh Warrington since he was just a little pup, and I like Warrington. He's dreadful to watch for sure. And naturally, if you don't have any power,
Boy,
you
you're really selling us on this fight, aren't you?
It's an emotional one for me. These are British guys that I've watched since, they had a handful of fights. And like Warrington's the kind of guy, like I remember the first time Josh Warrington stopped a guy. And I remember like that year probably it might have been like one of the biggest thrills for me that year to see Warrington like take 9 or 10 rounds in a 10 round fight to stop a guy. It was like just, again, you got to find the things to get excited about, and there's something in most fights. And so this one, it's one of those fights where I'm like, it's just as fascinating as any of these other ones, but it's a little heavily leaning towards Selby. Like a little heavy is kind of like an what is the word? Anti.
Understatement?
No, it's where two words don't go together. Your parents paid a lot of
Anachronism?
money for your like what do you got, like a master's or a doctor's or something?
MBA, yeah, masters.
Yeah, and you don't even know the word of like
I don't know
using
where
two
you're going.
words.
I can't get inside that brain of yours.
Well, I'm just saying, what is it when you have two words that don't really go together and you use them together? Like a paradox or
Incongruous?
something? Well,
Probably incongruous is
incongruous,
what you
yeah,
mean.
would sound about right. But anyway, that's it. You obviously don't care about that British fight. It'll be on Showtime or streaming on YouTube or something. At least you'll be able to watch it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Showtime's been streaming their international feeds. But that's it for this week. I want to remind you to subscribe over on patreon.com/sundaypuncher if you want extra content, a daily podcast, long form podcast, and we're coming up with new things. I'm real inspired. Really inspired. Dan Rayfield's getting his own TV show. And I'm sitting here thinking,
Yeah, I
like,
broke that news about a month ago, right?
yeah, I've been thinking about it, but like seeing the articles of like, yeah, the ESPN is actually doing this, it's like made it more real for me. And I'm just like sitting here like, man, if Dan Rayfield has a TV show and people are going to sit and listen to him, and if Kevin Ioli has his own YouTube channel that people watch, like, I could do anything. I literally could do anything. And so that's a long ways off, like probably towards the end of the year. But like, I'm also planning maybe a radio station. I've been toying with the idea of having a radio station. And right now, the only thing I've come up with is like on Discord, we'll have a voice channel that you can join at any time, and there will be like sound coming through. And it sometimes might be live shows, it might be Q and A's, and I might just be playing the podcast episode from this week, or maybe another boxing podcast that I thought was a good like a good podcast or something. Just so you at any point in time during the day you want to listen to something boxing related, you have access to that. Did you know Golden Boy has their own radio station?
I do because one of my favorite things which became a meme ever was on their radio show. they had the inventor of, I guess, Fiery Hot Cheetos or something. There was a great graphic for Golden Boy Radio with their star guest, the creator of the Fiery Hot Cheetos. So,
Jesus.
also, just to go back, yeah, we believe in you. We would love to have you do a show. I mean, that'd be great. We've started to put up these post-fight reaction videos on YouTube. I mean, I'm sure you could do something, you know, a million times better. I mean, look, if ESPN Plus is willing to broadcast a show Dan Rayfield does from his house, I'm sure that you could get your show on DAZN. And barring that, we could get you on the Brown Sugar app to go alongside the PBCM bounce cards. So yeah. That's always an option too.
Coming to Patreon, a reaction / review of Dolomite. I don't know what it is. I didn't watch it, but everyone is talking about Dolomite, and they're like, we want you to do a review of this. And so I'm going to find out what this is. I will review it, and I don't think it's boxing related, but everyone thinks it's hilarious. So there's that coming, in addition to like actual boxing stuff. Like, this might be a really bad movie, yeah. And they're going to torture me.
And that can be a backdoor pilot for your Brown Sugar show. So, yeah. Hey, that's a real app.
Yeah.
I'm not just being racist. Like, that's a real app. They show BBC on Bounce Show.
Oh, I thought it was a show about a broadcasting service for heroin addicts.
Oh no, yeah. If you don't know this, yeah.
Brown Tom, Sugar I am is being the funny. You don't. We are going to get complaints. We are on track. So I'm going to stop you there.
Yeah, this is really, really dangerous territory to be treading into.
Yeah, yeah. So thanks for listening. We got lots of content planned for this week. So be on the lookout. Thanks for subscribing. Leave a rating or a review and be nice. And if you're that guy in the podcast episode that or in the thread we made for the podcast that like really likes Tom, send me a message. I'll give you his phone number.
Oh God. Oh yeah, I didn't.
Tom
think
is a really
that
nice
guy.
Guy.
Yeah, that was a really nice shout out. Thanks whoever that was.
Yeah, I was just like, what the hell? Quick, why do people like Tom? Like,
quick shout out to Ryan. He's going to be covering his first event for us in person next week. He's going to be at the Badu Jack and Donna Stevenson. So this is part of the Sunday Puncher Global Takeover. So keep your eyes peeled during some of the camera angles of the show press row. You might get your eyes on our Canadian correspondent.
Skinny
you
know, dude.
We're going international glasses. Here.
Oh,
going
wait, that's you.
Here. Actually, we're already international because we had Gleb's our man in Russia. He covered that World Boxing Super Series fight for us.
Yep. Oh, God. Anyway, that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening. We'll be back.